HealthLink on Air. Linda Cohen here. My next guest this morning is Dr. Richard Cantor, professor of emergency medicine and pediatrics at Upstate Medical University and the director for the pediatric emergency department at Upstate University Hospital. So let's start by helping folks understand the distinction between urgent care and emergency care. I mean, what constitutes an emergency? Why would you choose to go to the pediatric emergency room?
That's a good question. It's sometimes difficult to decide which healthcare provider to go to. Generally, any childhood event that involves a fracture, a major injury, a major illness such as meningitis or pneumonia or gastroenteritis that the child looks quite ill at home, the parents are smart enough to know that urgent care may not be the best place to go simply because you may need a lengthy stay to many times go home after you get treatment. So a serious illness clearly doesn't belong in an urgent care setting. Trauma, which may involve just a simple elbow injury or wrist injury, that's a tougher one because often a slight fracture can be dealt with at urgent care, but by and large, an ear, nose, and throat problem, a dental problem, any sort of complex orthopedic problem, if you go to an urgent care, they will certainly do a good job, but they will refer you to us immediately to meet the subspecialist who can finish the case, which is kind of long.
So you have a wide variety of subspecialists available to you and the option to actually admit a child should you need to for a longer hospital stay.
Central New York is blessed to not only have a pediatric emergency department, but we are blessed to have almost every subspecialty available to us on premise. We routinely in an evening, and I'll be there this evening, we will have a child whose tooth was knocked out and a dentist will repair it. We will have a child who maybe has a dog bite to the face and we have facial ENT services. Many fractures in good weather, we have orthopedic services. If there's some closed head injury or other neurologic event, we have neurosurgery and neurology available. So this is where all definitive diagnoses are made and real care is delivered to the end of the case.
So that obviously, but you had said actually before we began the interview that in the best of perfect worlds, you might call your primary care physician and then they would help you decide where to go. But that doesn't always happen.
As much as I've become a peds emergency specialist, we're pediatricians at heart, and the backbone of all primary care is to stay with your primary care provider. We don't like interrupting the care pattern that somebody else has established. So if we see someone that has a minor event, we always make sure they get back into their practice. So in a perfect world, if a mom or dad had a child that had an illness or an injury, they should call their primary care doc, and they will get a healthcare professional who will say to them, that sounds like an emergency department problem. I wouldn't go to urgent care or vice versa. So that's a perfect world. Let's be honest. When your child is ill or injured, panic sets in, and I don't judge anyone. Go where you feel comfortable.
Absolutely. So let's say you're on the way to the emergency room with your child. What can you expect to find these days? I mean, are there still long waits? Are you mixed in with adults? How has it changed over the last decade?
The most wonderful thing that we've developed, and we're getting better every day, is the concept of family care. The child isn't the only patient in the emergency department when brought in. You have often a sibling that's tagging along because who knows what to do with a child in an emergency. So we've developed, with the help of the telethon, I should tell you, the Children's Miracle Network, specifically a shout out to Tony Gary, we've hired child life specialists, which these are professional, highly trained individuals who answer all the needs of the family in a time of stress and helplessness. What kind of food does your child like? How can we entertain a child while they're waiting? What do we help you with the sibling? Do you need to call home? I cannot tell you how it's revolutionized what we do down there because it's a background service. So that's number one. Number two, what can people expect about wait times? I have numbers for you. I've actually, we analyzed this, and I'll make it quick. Our average time from walking in the door to being triaged is about 14 minutes. Mm. Our average time from being triaged, in other words, what's wrong with you, what's your blood pressure, average time from triage to room placement is in the vicinity of 35 minutes, which is interesting on busy evenings that you can get in a room that quickly. An average time from being placed in that room to meeting a health care provider is 12 minutes. our length of stay keeps getting shorter. We're working on the issue of once we admit someone, getting them upstairs to Golisano, but that's getting better. The most important thing I need to tell you is we have the support of the hospital to make throughput and output a priority. And let's face it, no one wants to go to an emergency department. We try to make it as less stressful as possible.
Well, it sounds to me with having those child life people on board has to make a huge, huge difference.
It's what children deserve.
Right. And clearly they can't be treated like little adults.
No.
They have to be treated.
Some of the adults I know can't be treated like little adults.
So what advances actually have been instituted in addition to some of these that you've described in terms of the medical, the clinical approach?
Yeah. Well, the best thing, hands down, is for the first 10 years of pediatric emergency medicine as a subspecialty, we had to do exactly what you said, prove that children weren't little adults, and that's done with. Now, one of our most proud moments is the delivery of pain medication to children. There were times when kids would come in with fractures and just get Tylenol, and that day is done. We are now experts, fully trained, certified, and subspecialists in what we call procedural sedation. Everyone that I work with, nursing and obviously the physicians, provides anesthesia within the PEDS emergency department.
Wow.
For example, if your child breaks his wrist, he'll come in an ambulance or you'll bring them in, and if we spot the injury, he will immediately receive medication for the pain prior to anyone doing anything. Subsequent x-rays will be taken, and if the fracture has to be reduced or manipulated, we will put an IV in, and with constant surveillance at the bedside, provide anesthesia, where in an hour, a child will wake up, go home, with have no memory of the pain or any sensation of it. And we have new delivery systems for anesthesia. We don't often have to start IVs. We have intranasal atomizers that can deliver it as well. So the days of children crying in emergency departments are over.
And also, has there been new breakthroughs in terms of software that helps you determine how much medication to give that actually speeds up the process?
It's a very important point. Medication errors are a fact of life. And we have a quality assurance program in place to certainly address that issue. And one of the most wonderful things we have is a simple thing called weight-based medication delivery. We go on the assumption that many medications are completely based on your weight, and when a child has a certain weight, the computers and the order sets are set up to generate the exact dose of medication that is safe for that child, and that is translated to the nursing component, and there are fail-safe systems to check that. So our medication error rate is quite low.
Also, I read somewhere that there are less admissions now for certain reasons. Why would that be?
That's an even better point. Since we have better throughput to the institution and we get people upstairs quicker who are admitted, we have more room availability to, say, watch a child who's been vomiting for a few hours. They may stop and they go home. An asthmatic may get better and go home after a few hours. So it's a beautiful thing to be able to keep someone out of the hospital.
Wonderful. Well, I'm going to have you hold that thought, and we're going to continue in just a short minute. We're going to take a short break, and then we'll be back with more from Dr. Kanter. So stay with us. Welcome back to Healthlink on Air. Linda Cohen here along with Dr. Richard Kanter, and we're talking about the advances in pediatric emergency room care. Now, right before the break, we were talking about some of the advances that have taken place, and clearly you were talking about the better ways to give medication and all the technology involved in that. But also, I saw somewhere that there have been less admissions subsequent to pediatric visits. Tell me more about that.
The beauty of pediatrics is that the odds are in your favor that the child will do well if appropriate care is delivered. And everyone knows it's always better to treat most illnesses as an outpatient. And we're fully capable now within the PEDS emergency department of making the diagnosis quickly. Technologies that we have available, specifically ultrasound, for example, have really given us quick answers to problems where we used to admit people to observe and clarify. Specifically, a vomiting three-week-old that we used to think had a bowel obstruction, we'd often admit to the hospital and they'd swallow some barium and get an x-ray. This is not the case now. We immediately take care of an abdominal sonogram, and within an hour and a half, we have a full diagnosis. Yes, you need surgery. No, a dietary adjustment. That's a win-win.
Wow.
We have a real initiative now also to, we do EEG studies in the PEDS emergency department. Say a parent's home, and they're concerned their child may have had a seizure, and they come to us for help, neurology, along with our help. Within the PEDS emergency department, does the brainwave measurement, the EEG, and you can have it read, and someone would say, good news, it wasn't a seizure. So we make diagnoses rapidly, and often we send you home.
Wow. That is a big change. So how about things like fractures? What has changed with fractures?
Fractures, I already mentioned the eradication of pain. Another thing that we have is availability of in-room, quick-shot radiology, where if someone realigns a fracture, they can take one quick picture and know that it's done quickly, cast it, and you're home. That takes a lot of manpower, but we're getting better and better at that. What we're really trying to do is minimize radiation. One of the greatest national initiatives in pediatric emergency care is what we call radiation safety. It's a fact that it may or may not be proven as yet, but it's harmful to receive too much radiation.
So you're lessening the number of CAT scans, for example.
And that's an important point. Our department, along with 20 or 30 nationwide pediatric emergency departments, participated in a nationwide study on closed head injuries in kids to try and figure out which child needs a CAT scan and which child needs observation. Because it's simple to order a CAT scan, but you are really radiating a child, often unnecessarily. So now, there are national criteria based on over 195,000 visits that say this child needs a CAT scan, this child needs observation. This is one of our proudest achievements, to limit the radiation, because that two-year-old may grow up to be a lacrosse player when he's 18 and necessitate radiation for real injuries, and it's a cumulative thing that we try to lessen, so we're very proud of that. We also have other modalities, sonography, appendicitis. In a perfect world, no one should have a CAT scan. A sonographer, qualified and trained, can make the diagnosis without radiation. And
amazing.
That to me is, it's all good things. It's less expensive, less time consuming, and less harmful to the child.
So how have all of these advances that we've just gone through changed the outcomes?
The outcomes, well, first of all, when you diminish hospitalizations, there are less complications within the hospital. Number two, it's less costly. Number three, errors in diagnosis are minimal because the testing is more sophisticated. So there are many, many less poor outcomes. And number four, and this is a shout out to my practice community, which is forgotten in this, is immunizations have lessened the severity of infections that we see. And my gray hair will testify to the fact that in the old days, we had to do all these spinal taps and blood work because people were at risk. But now with immunity, we know the odds of a serious infection are minimal, and we don't have to hurt these poor kids.
We should give a shout-out to those parents who are thinking about not using a negative shout-out, not immunizing, because clearly I think people who have not lived through polio,
and
as we've had,
and
then they take for granted that these things are not going to
be
killers.
It's a touchy subject with
I know,
all
but
primary
clearly,
care doctors.
Immunizations are crucial.
It's unfathomable to not do it.
Right. Well, anyway, once you've decided on a pediatric emergency room is the place that you need to bring your child, what would you recommend? How would you prepare? How should you prepare your child for this visit?
An ambulance visit is not what we're talking about because you just call, go, and you're there. If there's a bit of a plan that you can implement, number one, if people have to bring their other kids, I get it, bring something to entertain the other children. We will provide food. Nutrition is not an issue. Secondly, bring a list of medications that the child may be on at home. It's very helpful. I understand in a panic people don't even remember their name, but that's a big one. Or have someone available in the home that I can call while you're visiting and they can read the medications to me. Number three, and if your child has any chronic illnesses, anything that's a bit out of the ordinary, it would be very helpful for you to get the number of your primary care doc I can call or your subspecialist. Because kids have complicated problems too, and why should I make you translate when I can talk to a professional about it?
But in terms of the child's experience, how do you prepare the child for what I mean, from the cycle dynamic issues, that frightening experience, especially if they have something like a trauma that they're experiencing.
This is where we have a specialty that no one else offers. We understand how to communicate with children, how to allay their fears, and how to address the needs of both the child and the family. Children, the days of, okay, turn the other way, this may hurt a little bit, are over. We talk to children about what's going to happen. We never lie. Children are amazingly resourceful. If you tell them how bad something's going to be, they can handle it. Fear of the unknown is a great, we've all been children, and that's what we try to take away. Every survey, every study on patient and childhood satisfaction with an ED visit always involves two basic things. People want to know what their progress is through the case. Why am I waiting? Where are we going? What are we doing? But the biggest one is informed delivery of information about what's going to happen to me. And many of the pediatric problems are pretty boilerplate. You have asthma. I can say to a mom and a child, listen, you're going to be here about 2 hours. We're going to give a couple of treatments, aerosolized, maybe some medication by mouth. You'll watch a video, and then we'll decide how you're going to do. If you tell people what they can expect, you have a friend.
Absolutely.
And a child, look, do I have to tell you, children are much more mature than us.
So you do the same for the child?
All the time.
In ways they can understand. That's great.
It's hard, but we do it.
So how does the emergency visit intersect with their regular pediatrician care? You mentioned earlier in the interview that you really try to work with their current primary care.
This is, again, the pediatrics land very quickly. I will always say to someone, did you call your primary care physician? Because sometimes I'll find out something like, their phone isn't working, something simple. Or, I don't bother, I just want to get taken care of, which is more difficult. But there's no question that continuity of care is the only way this country is going to get healthy. Interval care in an emergency department is certainly what we do, but there are better people out there for the health care of children.
And prophylaxis as well, preventative stuff.
Look, what it really boils down to is, it's nice to see you, go to your doctor, and close this case.
Okay, so you basically send them right back. And the continuity
has to
be.
And we send the record right back to the primary care doc.
Very brief, a little minute of time we have left. Are there changes with seasons? Do you see more cases?
Life is repetitive patterns. It is now asthma. It's winter. We have skiing. We'll have exposures. In the summer, we have trauma. I can tell you what's coming in by the weather.
Oh, wow. Well, I want to thank you so much for coming in and sharing all this very interesting information. And it's very, very uplifting to know that you have so many new advances for children, especially with Golisano right here. It's wonderful, wonderful dovetailing. My guest has been Dr. Richard Cantor. He's the professor of emergency medicine and pediatrics at Upstate Medical University. He's also the director of the pediatric emergency department at Upstate University Hospital.